de ser vasallo o de doblar.
It's not that we're going to be the same as the United States, but we should not be a vassal of the United States.
Se trata de que somos un pequeño país, pero con la misma dignidad.
We are a small country, but with the same dignity as the Europeans and the U.S. have.
Former Honduran President Manuel Zelaya. He was ousted in a U.S.-backed coup in 2009. To see the interview in Spanish, visit democracynow.org/es. To see all our coverage of Honduras, go to democracynow.org. Special thanks to Maria Taracena.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a membership director, a morning news and public affairs director, and an evening news and public affairs director. The deadline to apply for these three full-time positions has been extended to July 18th by 11:59 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information on these positions and how to apply, just go to kboo.fm/employment today.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is the 5 o'clock news. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information is available on Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon is planning to fund $500,000 to the Double Up Food Bucks program.
District Court rejects pleas from states and activists to block Trump's abortion gag ruling.
And in international news, NATO officials show concern after Turkey receives a shipment of air missile systems from Russia.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 12, 2019. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rejected a plea from 20 states, D.C., and abortion providers to block the Trump administration's Title 10 family planning rules from taking effect. Disputes over these rules have slowly been moving up the judicial system and are likely to reach the Supreme Court soon. The massive and controversial changes to Title 10, a federal grant program, prohibit family planning services that are recipients of the grant from performing, promoting, referring to, or supporting abortion as a method of family planning. The rule changes are likely to cost Planned Parenthood and groups like it as much as $60 million a year and come as a massive blow to pro-choice advocates.
Oregon is adding $1.5 million in funding to the Double Up Food Bucks program, which matches spending at farmers markets on fruits and vegetables for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program participants. Eric Tegetoff reports from the Oregon News Service.
A program that helps food benefit recipients purchase fresh fruits and vegetables is set to expand with additional funding from Oregon. The Double Up Food Bucks program matches every dollar up to $5 or $10 spent at farmers markets for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP participants. Oregon is appropriating $1.5 million to Double Up Food Bucks over this biennium. Farmers Market Fund Program Director Molly Natariani says the program's ability to make healthy food affordable has had a big impact on people's lives.
I had one person who was able to go off insulin, and other comments are that people really get a lot out of the community environment at the farmers market. You know, they say, I'm treated with dignity at the farmers market, which isn't always the case.
More than 600,000 Oregonians receive SNAP benefits, more than a third of whom are children. However, the program currently operates only in about half the farmers markets in the state. Spencer Masterson with Oregon Food Bank says the additional funding will help his and other organizations expand the program and also fund a pilot in grocery stores for parts of the state without access to farmers markets. Masterson calls Double Up Food Bucks a triple win for participants, farmers, and local economies. He notes how farmers markets help local communities.
We know that farmers markets draw people into downtown corridors, and then they end up going shopping at local businesses more. And we know that those business owners tend to buy other goods from their community.
Even though it's been more than a decade since the Great Recession, Masterson says folks in Oregon still are recovering. 1 in 8 Oregonians is considered food insecure, meaning they lack reliable access to affordable, nutritious food. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff.
The City of Portland's forum on the proposed Zenith Tar Sands Oil Terminal expansion has been moved to a bigger location for Monday night. The event will now be held at the University of Portland Buckley Center in Portland. KBO News caught up with Bonnie McKinley about the time, place, and format of this crucial public input session.
We want to get many, many people there, and where we want you to come is the Buckley Center, which is at the University of Portland campus, address 5000 North Willamette Boulevard, Portland, 97203, and our forum that the City of Portland is hosting is again on Monday, July 15th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., people can actually enter the building at 5:45. Once they go through security, if they're interested in signing in to testify, they can do that. That's on a first-come, first-served basis. I can tell you a little bit about the schedule as we know it. Could be subject to change, but we'll start with initial comments from the mayor, 10 invited guests, who come from impacted communities, medical professionals, very engaged researchers on these issues, et cetera. Those folks, we'll have about 10 of them. And then there will be an opportunity, again, based on first come, first served sign-in, public testimonies. Each one will be limited to 2 minutes. There will be 30, so there'll be an hour of that. And to respond, the mayor will have a panel comprised of representatives of the staff, the Portland Fire Marshal, someone from the Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Bureau of Development Services, and Portland Emergency Management. So those seem like good folks to respond to a lot of the questions that people have raised through their testimonies, and there will also be a roving microphone that can pick up people's questions. So there'll be about a half an hour of that. Again, the event is limited to 2 hours, and the event, once it starts, goes from 6:30 to 8:30. We also have another event coming up tomorrow, the Big Float. There will be a Stop Zenith Oil presence there. Beginning at noon, there will be a table, there will be parades, there will be banners that people can carry on their kayak or whatever. So we hope people can come to that. Check the Facebook event page for that. There are some free tickets still available thanks to the Human Access Project that has contributed those.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Tomorrow, the Human Access Project hosts the Big Float on the Willamette River, which for the first time features partnerships with local activist groups focusing on climate change and the petrochemical industry. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with organizer Will Levinson about what's on tap for tomorrow.
Extinction Rebellion is going to be there. They're going to bring the bomb train. So, I just love and I'm really proud that we've developed this event to the point that it's become a legitimate platform to showcase other important work that's being done in our community. Portland Harbor Community Coalition is going to be there as well. I'm really happy that they're going to be joining us. But it's a party with a purpose. You know, really we're going there to celebrate the Willamette. And of course, there is a lot more work that needs to be done. And ultimately, kind of the fun of the Big Float and really one of the philosophies of Human Access Project is it is possible with our particular work to have fun and make a difference at the same time. So, for people who maybe aren't engaged with those particular issues, this will be a chance to get them in the water, feel hopeful about the river, and then turn that energy into activism. That's our hope. And it winds up happening to a lot of people.
Now I want you to start naming names, okay? Who are some of the groups involved and some of the local businesses and bands and elected officials? Who are the people that are going to be there? Name the names now.
Oh, my God, I'm under so much pressure. I'm bound to forget people and something like that. I can tell you that we're going to have an eco-village that's going to have 6 or 7 local watershed councils, and it's going to be designed as a kids' area. So, again, what the hope is that people, it's just, fun party, so a lot of people don't want to be lectured to, potentially. You know, some people are going to seek these things out. Maybe they heard of them. They're going to be drawn to it. But, you know, for kids, it can be sometimes hard to engage them in environmental things. So these watershed councils are going to be providing fun activities for the kids. And the hope is that the kids will bring the parents in and then tell them about how they can do habitat restoration in their own communities to connect with these on-the-ground people doing work. Surf Rider is going to be there. Water Watch of Oregon is going to be there, in terms of our nonprofit partners that we invite to join us. Of course, Extinction Rebellion, Portland Harbor Community Coalition. Then, you know, beyond that, Subaru, they're a big supporter of the Big Float. They're a title sponsor, as well as Papina Swimwear, which is owned by my lovely wife, Lulu. Then, you know, I would just recommend going to the sponsor page of our website. I mean, it truly takes a community to bring something like this together. And what I love about the Big Float is that for individual people who participate, 60% of the people who participated last year, based on 11% survey results, said it was their very first time in the river. So it's a grassroots movement. It's action. It's not talking about the change that we want. It's activating it. It's bringing in the corporate community. So, you know, a lot of these corporate sponsors we've had for the last 7-8 years. And every year they go, they feel more of a relationship to the work that we do. So when it's time for a call to action, when it's time to have support, I mean, we already have these relationships. So it helps facilitate that. And then, you know, it's a movement disguised as a party. So, I mean, I love how it really represents collectivism, where individually, you know, you have voter turnout below 50%. I mean, to me, that communicates that collectively a lot of people have given up on the intangible idea that every one vote does make no difference, potentially, but collectively, when you add them all together, it does make a difference. So when an individual person comes and shows up to the Big Float, they're a part of this larger thing, and they realize, hey, you know, I'm not the only person who wants to aspire for a greater relationship with the Willamette. I have this whole community around me. And then City Hall notices. And when City Hall sees, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 people intertubing in downtown Portland, they say, you know, people care about this. We better give it a little bit of attention. So it really does a lot of different things. And I'm just super excited to hang out tomorrow. So headliner is Blitz and Trapper, awesome band. Opener is Red Ray Frazier, another awesome band. Then we have two floating band stages. Our mid-stage float is Portland Grooves, and I'm actually going to step on for a couple numbers and sing, which I'm also excited about. Because you can't host a party properly unless the host sings a song or two, right?
Willie Levinson, Human Access Project, The Big Float, humanaccess.com. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us today, and we'll see you in the water tomorrow.
Love the boo.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving. To Washington now, where this morning Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta announced he will be resigning. The move follows the arrest of Jeffrey Epstein, who is currently on trial for sex trafficking of minors. About a decade prior, Acosta was the U.S. attorney that handled a controversial and barely legal plea deal given to Epstein over those same charges. Acosta insisted that the case should not be as much of a priority, saying, quote, "As I look forward, I do not think it is right and fair for this administration's labor department to have Epstein as the focus, rather than the incredible economy we have today. Cabinet positions are temporary, and it would be selfish to stay in this position and talk about a case that's 12 years old. Acosta will be leaving the administration on Friday next week, replaced by Patrick Pizzella, the deputy labor secretary. In his resignation letter to the president, he called his position the honor of a lifetime.
The benefits of raising the federal minimum wage would far outweigh the cost, according to a report released this week by the Congressional Budget Office. Eric Galatis reports from the Public News Service.
Former U.S. Labor Department Chief Economist Heidi Shierholz, now with the Economic Policy Institute, says the move would raise wages for 27 million low-wage workers and would increase those workers' family incomes by $22 billion annually.
Inequality would go down. The number of people living in poverty would go down by 1.3 million, and nearly half of those would be kids. because their parents get a raise.
The last time Nebraska's minimum wage went up was in 2008, from $6.55 to $9 an hour. The state also allows exemptions for a variety of workers, including agricultural workers. Critics of a proposal introduced this year in the U.S. House to raise the federal wage to $15 an hour by 2024 said workers could lose jobs or see reduced hours, and warned that higher labor costs could be passed along to consumers. I'm Eric Galatis.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native artist and activist Haley Hanna Stepitin filed a police report Thursday saying she was assaulted by the mayor of Wasilla. Stepitin alleges Mayor Burt Cottle grabbed her left arm, tugging her, and would not let go until she asked if he was security or police.
It just really made me feel unsafe and uncomfortable. And this has been such a, you know, kind of scary, vulnerable position to be in, especially speaking out against it. I just hope people know it's not okay to touch people, especially in a public place when we are there as concerned community members.
Stepitin says the incident took place Wednesday at Wasilla Mid School, where a special legislative session was being held, when a group of people, including Stepitin, took the floor to protest the governor's budget cuts, calling on lawmakers for an override. Messages left with the mayor's office Thursday were not returned. But House Majority Spokesman Zach Freeman, also named in the complaint, told the Associated Press the allegation has been blown out of proportion. Stepitin is seeking an apology and says she would also like to go before the city council. The Northern Arapaho tribe has fired its longtime lobbyist. Following revelations, the tribe worked to stop the passage of several gaming-related bills by lobbying as a libertarian anti-gambling group called the Wyoming Public Policy Center. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards has more.
Wyoming lawmakers recently proposed bills that would have legalized so-called video skill games that might compete with the tribe's slot machines. Tribal officials estimated this could cost the tribe $14 million, hurting the tribe's social service programs. Former Northern Arapaho spokesman Mark Howell says Council Chairman Lee Spoonhunter instructed him to stop the bills, but he says the tribes and legislature have not had a good working relationship in the past.
We believe came to the belief that a direct assault by the tribe with the legislature would likely not be successful. So we created a, which is perfectly legal under Wyoming law, an entity that would carry the water for the tribe.
Howell says Wyoming doesn't see such strategies very often, but that he's conducted such campaigns for other clients dozens of times around the country. Chairman Spoonhunter denies any knowledge of the plan.
Mark had told us that he was going to deal with lobbyists and work on this, but we did not know that this Wyoming Public Policy Center was created.
Spoonhunter says they had no other choice but to fire Howell, since the tribe will likely face a backlash now that it's been revealed that the Northern Arapaho tribe is the sole funder of the anti-gambling organization. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards.
The U.S. Justice Department announced Thursday tribal governments will have direct access to the FBI's National Sex Offender Registry. The tool will allow information sharing between tribal governments and law enforcement to track and identify sex offenders. Tribal leaders from the White Mountain Apache Tribe and the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe praised the move, saying it will aid in improving public safety in Indian Country. In North Dakota, a resolution to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day is headed to the Grand Forks City Council Monday. Council members voted this week to send the measure to the full council. The resolution recognizes Indigenous Peoples Day on the second Monday in October. The holiday would honor the contributions of Native people, joining other cities across the country which have already made the change. The resolution was crafted with the Indigenous community. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The Federal Trade Commission approved a settlement with Facebook today that requires the tech giant to pay about $5 billion in penalties. The settlement comes after almost 2 years of constant privacy scandals surrounding the company. Facebook previously warned shareholders that they expected to pay anywhere from $3 to $5 billion as a result. However, Facebook stock only grew in value, with about 1% increase both at Facebook's warning and at the announcement today. Critics say the penalty of $5 billion only amounts to 1 month of revenue for the company, a drop in the bucket for hopes of improving privacy.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News at 5:30 this evening. It is Counterspin. At 6 o'clock, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it is The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Your weekend weather forecast tonight, cloudy with a low of 62. Saturday, great hiking or gardening weather. Partly cloudy and 82. Looks like more of the same for Sunday. Today in history, in 1948, Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion ordered Israeli troops to remove Palestinians from their homes in the towns of Lod and Ramlah. The direct order called for the expulsion of, quote, all Palestinians quickly and without attention to age. The quote of the day is from U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who says, "I grew up with a real romanticism about America. I grew up in a first-generation household where your parents give up everything. And for me, America was the greatest thing ever to exist."
Yesterday, President Trump issued an executive order demanding that every department and agency in the federal government provide the Department of Commerce all records regarding the number of citizens and non-citizens in the United States. By imposing this order, the Trump administration has found a way to circumnavigate the Supreme Court's decision of blocking the question, "Are you a citizen?" from appearing on the 2020 census. The census is used for the allocation of congressional seats, congressional district maps, and the distribution of billions of federal dollars to states and localities over the next 10 years. In a speech yesterday, Trump announced that this order, quote, "will greatly inform a wide array of public policy decisions," end quote.
Today, I will be issuing an executive order to put this very plan into effect immediately. I am hereby ordering every department and agency in the federal government to provide the Department of Commerce with all requested records regarding the number of citizens and non-citizens in our country. They must furnish all legally accessible records in their possession immediately. We will utilize these vast federal databases to gain a full, complete, and accurate count of the non-citizen population, including databases maintained by the Department of Homeland Security and the Social Security Administration.
People in more than 600 cities across five continents are holding special coordinated protests tonight to push back against the Trump administration's immigration policy. Jen Stanley reports from the Public News Service in New York.
The Lights for Liberty rallies are a response to continued reports of inhumane conditions and family separations. Hundreds of migrants a day are processed through New York's Foley Square, one of 42 vigil sites in the state of New York alone. Allison Hirsch with the Service Employees International Union 32BJ, one of the event sponsors, says she isn't surprised that so many have organized vigils.
I think it's another testament to the fact that the majority of Americans believe that people are people, whether they're native-born in the United States or whether they come here to seek a better life for themselves and their families. And people are angry and upset and want to stand up and say, not in our name. We are going to fight back.
In Foley Square from 7 to 9 p.m., advocates, activists, and people who've been affected by the detention policies will speak, with a silent, candlelit vigil to follow. Speakers at the event include actor Rosie O'Donnell and Women's March co-founder Linda Sarsour.
That was Jen Stanley reporting from New York. In Oregon, protesters will be gathering at the Oregon Country Fair down in Veneta tonight and other locations around the state. Here in Portland, protesters are meeting at the ICE Detention Center on McAdam Avenue starting at 7:30 p.m.
Immigrant rights groups say fear is spreading among people in the U.S. military who have undocumented family members after word that a program designed to protect them from deportation may be terminated. From the Public News Service, Suzanne Potter has the story.
The U.S. Customs and Immigration Service confirms that the Parole in Place program is under review, but says no decisions have been made. Carlos Luna is with Green Card Veterans, a chapter of LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens. He says the ICE raids slated to start this weekend have many service members terrified.
people will be more afraid to open their doors. The ones who are active duty service, they fear going on base to their spouse to do shopping. If they have childcare on base, they can't even do that. Our military bases are federal, so they will gladly hand over to ICE any military spouses that may come up on a background check as undocumented.
On Thursday, California Senator Kamala Harris, along with 22 of her colleagues, sent a letter to the Department of Homeland Security urging the agency to keep its program intact, saying that ending it would tear families apart and be grossly unfair to those serving in the military. I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new provision has been added to the 2020 Intelligence Authorization Act that could have dire consequences for journalists and whistleblowers. This provision, added by Democrat Adam Schiff of California, would broaden the legal definition of what constitutes a covert intelligence operative to cover all citizens who have had classified relationships with U.S. intelligence services, even after they have long been retired from service. Advocates of freedom of the press contend this change would reduce government accountability and open journalists to prosecution for exposing potential abuses of power by the intelligence community. So far, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden has expressed his concern over this proposal. Several free speech and open government advocates have additionally submitted a letter to Congress demanding that the new provision be removed. More information on those efforts is available at opengovernment.org.
The House voted today to add the Iran Amendment to the first Defense Authorization Bill, a bill setting guidelines for everything related to national security. The amendment would prevent Donald Trump from launching into a war with Iran without getting approval from Congress first, something that Democrats worry could happen as a result of Iran's breach of the Iran nuclear deal. Passing this amendment has sparked tensions between the House and Senate, as well as Democrats and Republicans. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy accused Democrats of treating national security like a game.
Three Iranian boats harassed a British oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz yesterday before being driven away by a British warship as tensions ratchet up between Iran and the West. Additionally, last week, British Marines boarded and detained an Iranian oil tanker off the coast of Gibraltar, which was believed to be violating EU sanctions by supposedly carrying oil to Syria. Iran condemns the seizure as an illegal interception, and Spain says the U.S. ordered the operation. These altercations represent just part of the mounting tensions between Iran and NATO, which have been escalating since Iran violated the conditions of the Iran nuclear deal last week.
Turkey's uneasy place in NATO has been shaken even looser today after they received a shipment from Russia, the S-400 surface-to-air missile system, in defiance of U.S. objections. The deal places Russian weapons in key NATO position, which could strike at nations such as Syria. NATO members also worry that the Russian engineers that are scheduled to install the system could glean secrets from the technology stationed in Turkey. According to Pentagon strategists, the S-400 deal is a move to try and divide NATO. The delivery of the missile system comes just ahead of celebrations on Monday, marking the third anniversary of a failed coup. The director of the German Marshall Fund said, "This will create a lot of anxiety inside NATO, and this is the exact thing that Russia is after."
Almost three dozen cannabis plants were found growing in the flower beds in front of the Vermont State House today. A visitor alerted police, who subsequently investigated and found 34 plants growing among the flowers. In Vermont, possession of small amounts of marijuana for recreational use is legal, but it remains illegal to grow in public. Police Chief Matthew Rome says he foresees no criminal investigation unless someone claims the plants. "This isn't the first time this has happened. It's been going on for years, and it's likely someone is trying to make a point." Regardless of any political point, Rome said, quote, "This was a humorous thing to come off from vacation."
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Friday, July 12, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ethan Fry, Annette Newell, Kenzie Beard, and Alex Connor. The producer is Tammy Hobteus, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Coming up on the morning Monday morning. Yes, sorry about that. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, it's 7. It is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10, it's Locus Focus, featuring talks with experts, activists, and policymakers about all the things that matter in our environment with host Barbara Bernstein. At 11, First Voices Radio focuses on global topics and issues of critical importance to the preservation and protection of Mother Earth, presented in the voices from the perspective of the original peoples of the world. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on kboo.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you would like to become a member, and we certainly hope that you would, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Have a wonderful weekend.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Northwest String Summit from Thursday, July 18th through Sunday, July 21st at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. The 18th annual Northwest String Summit features Americana, bluegrass, indie rock, and jam genres. Performers include Two Nights of Yonder Mountain String Band, Trampled by Turtles, Galactic, Dark Star Orchestra, Fruition, Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, Shook Twins, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest String Summit from Thursday, July 18th through Sunday, July 21st at Horning's Hideout, 21277 Northwest Brunswick Canyon Road in North Plains, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.